So I'm going to step a little bit bigger picture, and the issues that we're looking at are cardiovascular disease, but also bigger chronic health disease issues. And the way this project came about, was the Oregon Health Authority, which is the state public health office, their public health division came to us and said, our strategy is really trending more toward healthy people, healthy places, and much more of a coordinated approach. So even though public health funding still comes in silos, we don't want to work in silos so much anymore. And we don't want to be telling people over here to quit smoking, and over here to eat better, and over here to move more, and over here to get screened for colorectal cancer. We still need to do all of those individual behavior change messages, but we want to really go up a level and think about how we talk in a coordinated way about reducing risk for chronic disease and improving health. The Healthy Places, Healthy People strategy that the division is using really aims to do policy, systems, and environmental change. So we know that individual behavior change is an important part of that too, but they're trying to work much more at the policy and system change level to make sure that people have access to healthy food and healthy behaviors and decreased access to unhealthy foods and unhealthy behaviors. What they came to us for was to figure out, well, how do we talk about this? How do we say all of these many things we want people to do in a way that doesn't make everybody nod off before we're through the sentence? And how do we make this relevant to people who don't work in public health and don't know what a social determinant is? So that's where we came in. Oh, I have no relationships to disclose. So our goal was to look at how do we link health behaviors that prevent and manage chronic diseases to really get away from silos. And the key behaviors that we're looking at, you'll see here, physical activity, nutrition, tobacco prevention, self-management of chronic diseases. And in Oregon, the key self-management behaviors we're looking at are participation in a Living Well with Chronic Disease self-management curriculum, and also the tobacco quit line. And then we're also looking at screenings, and we prioritize colorectal cancer, breast and cervical cancer screenings. We also want to make sure that in all of our communication and outreach, we're calling for policy and system change, that we're not getting stuck at the individual behavior change level, but we're also talking about the need to change environments where people live to make it possible for them to do the individual behaviors that we want them to do. And we want to make sure we're using consistent messages across all programs, again, so that people are hearing one thing rather than 5 million different things they need to do. So we started with a little bit of research. We looked at a lot of other campaigns in states, Hawaii, Missouri, Florida, Arkansas. Many states have tried to do this. And we also looked at a couple of national level campaigns, the Small Step Initiative, Sea Change, other national campaigns. One thing we found pretty quickly was that a lot of comprehensive campaigns are really focused on obesity prevention and specifically on physical activity and nutrition. And so we're really trying to make this one step more convoluted by adding in tobacco prevention and screenings and self-management. So we just wanted to make our job a little harder. We also did a very quick literature review, and one of the key pieces came out at the end of the project, which was the RWJF, A New Way to Talk About the Social Determinants of Health study. If you haven't read that, I would highly recommend it. They've looked at what language works for people. They've got a great section on Democrat versus Republican framing and how you talk about these issues in different political circles. So it's a terrific report. And then we did focus groups in Portland and also in Pendleton, which is in eastern Oregon. Like Colorado and many other states, we have a big urban-rural divide where most of our state population lives in Portland, and it's really progressive. And a little bit of the state's population lives in the rest of the state, and it's pretty conservative. And so there's a big split, especially in rural communities, people feeling like the decisions at the legislative level get made for the crazy liberals in Portland, and the rest of the state gets left out of that. So we really wanted to make sure we were hearing from folks in both communities. And you'll see here the range of people who we talked to. And then we also did executive interviews with health advocates, policymakers, and community leaders, as well as folks dedicated to public health work. So let me tell you about some of the things we find. So our advocates, here I'm talking mostly about public health insiders, public health policy advocates, other people working in policy and public health, but also other policymakers and key influencers. So one of the first things we heard, especially from public health advocates, was that this coordinated approach and really public health environmental change frame is critical, but people don't get it. So we had a couple people say to us, boy, I didn't really understand the public health population-based model until the end of my MPH program, and I don't think most people I work with get it. So one thing we're hearing is that we really need to do this education about the public health model, even within our colleagues in public health. We asked about priorities, because here we are trying to promote five different behaviors, and we wanted to know from our advocates, are they with us on this? Do they really see these as equal? Now, it was interesting because all the tobacco prevention folks were really worried that everybody thought we were done with tobacco and nobody would want to talk about tobacco anymore. Well, they were kind of right on that. Our health advocates, most of the people working on public health advocacy, prioritized nutrition. Because they said, you know what, we've come a long way on tobacco prevention. We're not all the way there yet, but we have a long way to go on obesity prevention. We don't have the infrastructure. People don't get it. They're not making the connection between behaviors and results. And between nutrition and physical activity, we really feel like nutrition is the key thing we need to work on. But then almost everybody else, policymakers and other community leaders, said, you know what, I think tobacco use kills a lot more people than obesity, and the solution is pretty clear. We need to get people to not smoke, and we've come a really long way, so let's not stop now. I'd prioritize tobacco prevention. So we've got kind of a split among folks who are working on, which in my mind is good, because we have a range of people thinking about different issues. Now, self-management and screening gets a lot harder, especially with our public health policy change advocates. They're really thinking upstream, and they're not really wanting to concentrate very much on people who are already affected by chronic diseases. They want to prevent the ones in the future. So we know we've got some work to do to say, you know, it's going to take us a long time to get to the point where we're really preventing everything upstream. And meanwhile, we have all these people who cost a lot of money to the healthcare system, aren't living very good lives, put a lot of stress on their families, can't work, and we really need to focus on them for self-management and screening. And then with our advocates, we also found really an over-reliance on a sticky message. People seem to think that if we could just come up with the right slogan and the right message that everybody would get and memorize and say back to us, we would be done. And sort of a reluctance to really dig in more on the strategy. They really wanted to think about data. And from our perspective and from what we heard from our consumers, data is not the answer. Dumping more data on people isn't going to change anything. Connecting to values is what's going to help. So let me talk to you a little bit about our consumer research. So in our focus groups, and the reason we wanted to talk to consumers is because even though we know that a lot of this is a policy change issue, and most of this isn't stuff that will ever go to the ballot, we know that our consumers who will be affected by the policy change have to support us or at least not fight us. And we've seen in Healthy Worksites work in Oregon, people who work in worksites where soda's being taken out of vending machines, you can't bring cupcakes anymore, people revolt, right? And even public health department workers revolt. They go kind of crazy. So we want to make sure that we've got those folks on our side and that they see policy change as something that's helpful and not punitive or nanny state-ish for them. So one of the first things we asked consumers was, is it hard or easy to be healthy in Oregon? And across our groups, with the exception of our group that was filled with people with diagnosed chronic diseases, every other group said, oh, it's super easy to be healthy in Oregon. We have the mountains, we have the ocean, you can go mountain biking, you can go whitewater rafting, there are farmers markets everywhere, everybody eats organic food. Okay, great. Then as we started talking about it, well, actually, I can't ride my bike to work because we don't really have any safe bike paths. And it's really expensive to shop at the organic grocery, so I go to Winco and they don't really have very good produce. And, you know, at my office, if I want to take a smoking break, that's great. I'm encouraged to do that. But a walking break, that's kind of weird. People would think something's wrong with me. So we found a lot of barriers as we started talking. And one of the things that we started to realize was, in their minds, ease is not the problem. We don't need to make these things easy. We need to make them convenient, and we need to create access. One of the messages that we were testing is we want to make the healthy choice the easy choice. And that's something that CDC has used, a lot of states has used, Oregon was starting to use that. And we were finding that that was not really working because ease is not the same as some of these other things. Now, the good thing is there was some recognition, pretty good recognition in our groups of the social justice issue in all of this, that some people, because of their circumstance, where they live, the amount of education they have, etc., have more choices than other people or more access to choices than other people. And we heard that coming up pretty voluntarily for people, which was great. Now, the values, the overriding value we heard, and this is not uncommon in Oregon, as I'm sure it's true in Colorado and any of our other sort of frontier states, this is all up to me. I need to have the willpower. I can make a healthy life anywhere. This is all about me. Nobody can tell me what to do. I don't need the government, right? So the problem is they're saying that they know what to do. They just don't do it. And when we ask why, some of it's the busy lifestyle. Some of it's, well, McDonald's is everywhere, and my kids clamor for that on the way home, and it's just a lot easier. But I just need to find the willpower, and I can make the choice. So we knew we needed to really play up that freedom and self-determination value. Also, choice isn't really the problem. People talked about how health is their choice. They want to make the right choice. People make good and bad choices. Even people with lots of money and other resources make bad choices and are unhealthy. So it's not about making the choice. It's about having the options. So choice, again, sort of judgmental. Like if we talk about making the healthy choice, it implies that you're not going to because you don't know what to do and you're going to make the wrong choice. And also we have McDonald's everywhere, so we don't have the kind of options that we want. We talked a lot about what is health anyway, and we showed people some different pictures and talked about the choices they would make. So a burger versus a salad, which would you pick? Well, I know I should pick the salad. Sometimes I might pick the burger, and some days I might pick both because I want a little protein. So I might want to have some vegetables and some protein. So there was some interesting discussion of what people were looking for. We also asked them to think about what's a healthy community. So if you lived in a community where you had all these options, what would that look like? And they did some drawings. And they drew overall sort of communities of yesteryear, places where you could walk to the corner market, everybody was out socializing in the little square, people could ride their bikes everywhere. This is their idyllic community, and nobody lives in that, and none of them ever had lived in that. And even folks who had lived in Portland and moved out to Pendleton to get out of the urban area said it was pretty, they thought it would be easier to be healthy there, and in some ways it was, because it wasn't as stressful, but they didn't have access to as many things, and there wasn't the social pressure to be fit that there was in Portland. Because they weren't working in the same way. They moved out there to take care of their mom. They were at home in their jammies and their sweats, eating in front of the TV. So the environment was really starting to affect them. So we looked at those communities and said, well, who's going to make your community look like that? Oh, me. It's up to us. We're going to do that. Okay, well, how does that happen, we said. Oh, well, I know somebody who started a farmer's market. I know somebody who started a community garden. These are great ideas, but they aren't things that everybody in those groups are going to do, right? That's kind of the top level of our population who's going to take that level. As we dug into it a little bit more, we heard some receptivity to government involvement, but on the, as I said, small government level. So there's big distrust of elected officials and the lawmakers who make all their decisions based on the people in Portland. But there was a lot of openness to city planners and city councils and the mayor's role. So that opened an interesting window, too, in the role for government and policy change. We looked at a couple studies that Northwest Health Foundation did, looking at perception of the role of government versus individual in creating change in communities. And in 2007, 53% of respondents said that public health was an individual responsibility, whereas 43% said societal responsibility. So really tipping toward that individual behavior, self-determination, self-reliance model. But in 2010, they asked, who's done more to improve society's well-being, to create safer workplaces, create better vehicle safety, to control infectious disease. And here we saw 50% saying government and 39% saying individual behavior and social enterprise. So a little bit more receptivity toward a governmental role in creating health. And we asked them too, can you think of any laws that exist that help people make healthier choices or be healthier? And in every group, our Indoor Clean Air Act came up. So that was something, whether people thought bars should be smoke-free or not, they recognized that that was something that the government had done that was really helping people be healthier. So by and large, we were really seeing a disconnect between our insiders and the public. Our insiders were wanting to hammer people with logic and data, to talk about environmental constraints front and center, and to talk about how the big bad industry is manipulating you. So soft drink companies are out to get you just like the tobacco industry does. We just need to let people know that and they'll stop drinking soda. Well, not really so much, because the public core values are all about self-determination and freedom. And they think that corporations should be able to market whatever they want. They just need to be able to make the choice, and they need to have the options to choose something else. And we heard a lot of if only. If only McDonald's weren't everywhere. If only I could walk. If only I could take a walking break at work. If only I had time to sit down and eat a healthy lunch at work instead of snarfing a Snickers bar and drinking a soda and going back to my job. So, what's the message? So we come back to this message where we started about making the healthy choice the easy choice, and we're not so sure about that because choice, again, is laden with judgment. It's not so much about making the choice, it's about having the options from which to choose. And it's not really about making it easy, because even if you've got the options, it's not always easy to choose the salad over the burger, right? That stinks some days when you really want a burger. It's more about access and convenience, and again, self-determination. So we're still playing around with what's exactly the right message and the catchiest way to phrase this to make our public health advocates happy, but we know it's something more like ensuring access to healthy options for all Oregonians, which is great because it really puts us back in that policy systems environmental change frame where we want to be. How am I doing on time?
Three more minutes.
Okay, cool. So let me show you the key messages real quickly. Eating better, moving more, and living tobacco-free lets Oregonians live healthier lives and do the things they love. So that's the message we really want to have coming through in all of our chronic disease prevention, health promotion silos. We want to tie it back to those core behaviors. However, today in Oregon, too many of us don't have access to nutritious food, places to play and exercise, and smoke-free air. And we know from our discussion groups that that's something that people understand and that resonates with them. As a result, chronic diseases like asthma, heart disease, diabetes, and cancer are on the rise. So we need to prevent those in the first place and take care of the ones that already exist. So our call to action, we have the power to change the places we live, learn, work, and play so everyone can have longer, healthier lives. So we really want to engage the dialogue and engage our communities in creating that change. So where are we going from here? We're rolling out this message frame and some tools for using it to our 36 counties that are funded to do this work, as well as partners and other programs working on chronic disease prevention issues. Again, if we can all be saying the same thing, we're going to hammer home the point that we need to not just help people quit smoking, but we need to create changes so it's easier for people to not smoke and choose healthier food and get some physical activity and the other things they need to do. We'll be creating a campaign, taking lessons from some of these other great state campaigns, but really expanding that beyond obesity prevention to look at comprehensive chronic disease prevention. And then lots of different strategies and tactics we're looking at. Again, one of the things we know is that we've got to start on the inside with getting public health folks to really adopt this public health and ecological change frame. And one of the things we're really excited about is looking at some storytelling about what's happening in communities that give people more options. So we want to invite people to show us where's a place where you have a lot of options, and so you're able to make the choice you want to make. And where's a place where you only have one option, and so that's what you're stuck with. And if it looked different, you could make a different choice and be healthier. And so we're going to invite those stories through social media and community outreach and partnership development and other forums, and then share those stories through earned and paid media, again, back through social media and out into community engagement. And if you're interested in knowing sort of how this evolves, if you'll leave your card with me, I'd be happy to let you know as we move forward. Thanks.
Okay, and then if the presenters would like to come up here, we'll take questions. We have about 15 minutes. It's about quarter till two. So if you guys want to come up. And do we have any questions? Okay, and when you have a question, if you could just let us know who it is the question is for. Okay, so sir? Actually, right. Oh.
Go ahead.
Okay.
My name is Don Ziegler. I'm with the American Medical Association, and only one of the presentations even refers to the medical community, and that was the Colorado, where people were linked into the medical forum, and then one of the accountable things was to the providers who kind of measures. I'm not sure how you measure that, but we have a frustration in the medical community of wanting physicians to advocate for healthy lifestyles. They don't have the time or the inclination or don't practice it. But even when they want to, they don't have the time to practice. And we need to have better links with the community. And how can we have some wonderful examples in all of your projects this morning? How in the world can we get the physician community to say the right things in a few minutes and then say, I want you to go to this, and then I want to hear back what you did. So it's all integrated better. And then the physician community can be very strong advocates on changing the public policies, on reducing sodium, on the density of McDonald's, on smoking, smoke-free. So we need to better utilize it. I'm in here for public health, and that's great, but we need to link it all together.
Can I just say something? In our program, actually, we were just talking over lunchtime that we've recently seen physicians actually referring to our program in kind of that back and forth mode, I guess, that we really think is an effective model to get those physicians on board. Again, as you say, is important. We have seen, you know, some people are wary to go to physicians. However, I think with that relationship that we are making with community physicians, it's a strong partnership that will only make our program stronger, I think.
And I think one of our hopes, working with the kind of intervention we were talking about, whether it's exactly that one or something that evolves from it, was it would be a wonderful thing if physicians and other healthcare providers had a portfolio of options to that they could offer to their clients in a community. And I mean, we are closely connected with healthy solutions, just geographically, and because some of us work together in other arenas. And we were hoping that perhaps at some point that Healthy Solutions would, community health workers would have such a portfolio in hand. So if somebody, they're talking with people, and if, for instance, there was one of these particularly women who said, you know, I know what to do, I just don't know how to make it fit, that they could whip out the information about this particular intervention.
I'd just like to add one additional thing. At Colorado Heart Healthy Solutions, one of the components of our program is that once a month, our PI, Maury Krantz here, sends out an email blast to providers that we've found out in the community. And it's just a short little paragraph or two with cardiovascular education. And the whole point is to try to get some banter back and forth to bridge that gap between public health and the medical community.
I spent 15 minutes answering your question. But I wanted to just say that in Oregon, we're really looking at how do we integrate primary care and public health and get those two sides of the same coin speaking the same language. And I have something that I'll give you if we can remember before we leave. But I think the state public health associations are a really terrific resource. And if we can match the state medical association and the state public health association and then do that at the national level with AMA and APHA, I think that that information sharing is going to help all of us bring all of this messaging and programs back and forth, and also engage the medical community in being advocates, just as you're saying, for some of this policy change, because they're pretty strong voices in most state houses.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Next question. Sir, you had a question up front.
Just a real quick one for Dr. Bryant. You mentioned the new immigrants and having increased heart disease knowledge. And I just thought Greg Capital works with us, he's a medical anthropologist. Mm-hmm. He's done a survey looking at Hispanic speaking only individuals that health screening events. Mm-hmm. They have very, very poor knowledge. So I just wondered if you had any insights in your behavioral background as to why is that people that come from Mexico, new viewers, don't speak English, aren't getting that information? Is it just the nations that they come from don't have that awareness?
I don't think that's necessarily the issue. The groups that I know about that were from that initial Churton study, one group was Asian immigrants in the Seattle area, and one was Hispanic immigrants in the Chicago area or farther out from Chicago. Issues were that information was not available in their language more, and in addition, in a kind of a different area, same topic, the folks at the University of Rochester conducted a similar study or added on to that study, and their community of interest, their partner community, is the deaf community, an enormous deaf community in Rochester because there's a school there that draws people there. And some of the most underserved in terms of health messaging folks are deaf folks. So it's not an issue of education. It's not an issue of socioeconomic status. It's clearly just that the messaging isn't taking place in arenas where they do what they do or in a language that they can understand. So I think it's more that some of it's cultural, but I think a lot of it in this country for new immigrants is that we're just not serving those populations. Craig, what did you find? This is from Mexico, right?
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, that's the population is Mexican nationals. And I think that, you know, the whole risk factor paradigm is tied to the idea of prevention. So without that concept,
right,
certainly there's fatalismo. And so the idea that, people are going to talk about what causes a chronic disease is people aren't talking about.
No, that just assume that, right. It's part of getting old.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So when I get sick,
so that's true.
But I don't think about all of these elements that are going to make me sick down the road. And so, yeah, I think that's a big part of it, lack of the concept of prevention.
But part of that also is just not getting that message, that not getting the prevention message, not getting the risk factor message. Well, thank you for the question.
Interesting. Any other questions? Actually a part of the Seguros en Su Vida modules. It consists of one session. Tobacco hasn't really been much of a focus in our population, actually. We find that in El Paso there's more of an issue with drinking, especially binge drinking. But as far as a phase three goes, we are planning on reapplying for an extension. But as it is right now, we have three more years in this particular phase to go. So, but tobacco is, yes, already a component of our intervention.
One more question.
Yeah.
I was interested in your pre-post survey design, because Craig Mann is using that in his Latino program, which in some ways is very similar to what you're doing. And my question is, have you thought about using that passport, which I think is a really nifty idea, as a way to validate your outcomes? In other words, a check system to see what they're actually doing and using that as part of your evaluation. I may have missed that.
Yeah, we addressed that in our focus groups in our exit survey. We asked them about their perception of the utility of the health passport and whether or not they found it, you know, useful if they were even using it. And about half of them reported that they were using it and that it was helpful, and the other half reported that they had no interest in it and couldn't even remember where they put it. But we are interested in following up on that more. It is just one component of it, such a huge project that we don't want to lose sight of that. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Jennifer. Just quickly, I think your talk was very interesting. You know, I'm curious to know, where did you guys find on the idea of trying to reconcile this socio-ecological approach and turning towards policy, which I think public health is starting to do more and more nowadays, with the kind of established paradigm of screening and the message that goes to the individual, you know, change your behavior, do this. I mean, I think you've done a good job of presenting that paradigm that I think is so entrenched in public health.
Yeah.
So how do we reconcile those two to kind of turn the workforce, the leaders of the workforce, more towards creating these healthy environments? And then practically, how do we do that?
Right.
I mean, there's, you know, this is the big question. I mean, we take steps, we try to take steps, but ultimately sometimes it feels a bit theoretical.
Yeah.
And you know, what do? I mean, we can talk about this until we're blue in the face, but how then do we?
Well, so where I see the two things coming together is we're talking about screenings and we're talking about self-management, and those are individual behaviors. But where we're trying to focus on making sure that people have access to those things. Because right now, when not enough people have access to colorectal cancer screening, it's the most preventable form of cancer. So how do we change that? Health reform might do it, but you know, who knows when. And on self-management, it's the same thing. It's really trying to make system changes at the funder level, so insurance systems and hospital systems, to make sure that self-management programs are just a standard part of care. Like, you shouldn't get discharged from the hospital without a referral into a self-management program that's paid for by your insurance or paid for in some other mechanism. Right now, self-management programs are cobbling together foundation and other resources every year and trying to stay alive, because they're not an established part of the system. So some of these individual behaviors are things that we're trying to implement at the systemic level. How does it happen? I think a lot of the healthy work sites work is a good place where that's starting. In Oregon, our governor has created this wellness initiative that makes all public work sites adopt a series of policies and behaviors to get junk out of the vending machines and be tobacco-free on campus and all of that kind of stuff. And I think we're doing that initiative on a broader scale starting this sort of into this winter to bring private business into the conversation. And I think if we can get work sites to start changing and really playing there on the real bottom line, I mean, there's a proven return on investment in creating healthy policies and practices in your work site. If we can establish that at a work site level, then I think we can start to push into other levels of the community because our population is going to be more accustomed to it and hopefully see the benefit of it, and we'll have even more ROI data to bring into some of those other sectors. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the money that gets dumped into our states anytime we try to pass health is ridiculous. And so there's some raising of awareness. You know, I talked about how the health advocates want to talk about the horrible manipulative tactics of the bad guys. And that doesn't play so well with consumers, but with decision makers, it actually can, especially when you look at, you can prove, you know, pretty discreet targeting of lower SES populations, minority populations, and that plays better with legislators from those districts.
You know, on this point, the public health people are very good at doing public health services, but then when it comes to changing the policies and the laws in the community, they're stuck.
Yeah.
They can't do it. They can't get up there. They might suggest to somebody, but it's got to be the noise makers in the community, from the Heart Association, the Lung Association, the, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They can get up there and say, pass this law. That's what it is. Okay. So we need to have better partnerships.
Right.
Well, of course they are. Well, first you said public health care, but those are
right.
That is public health.
Right.
And those are collaborations with public health. Totally. They're talking about being workers, you know, and
capital PH public health, not lowercase PH public health. But I think it, in other, in some of the in, environmental arenas, and this is environmental work as well, we're beginning to understand how absolutely critical it is that everybody be at the table, transportation people, manufacturers, and anybody in the community to be engaged, not just traditional public health. That's.
And it's 2 o'clock, so what we're gonna do is we're gonna stop here. I want to thank everybody for coming. If you have more questions, please feel free to see if the presenters would be willing to chat with you one-on-one before they head out either to the closing session or anything. But thank you again for coming and sharing the APHA experience.